Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. I'm your host, Willem van der Horst. Let's see what's going on. I'm just back from a lovely long weekend in the south of France, visiting some friends and family over there. If you've been following the podcast for a while, or me or my podcast or my blog or anything else, like, I mean, you know that basically I was living over there last year and most of my family lives there. So as is traditional, I had copious amounts of amazing cheeses and charcuterie and fine Spanish ham and wine, and including a special tasting session, my sister's latest wines. So my sister's got a vineyard over there. And again, if you follow me, you know that. But, you know, to repeat myself, but of course, I'm one of her biggest fans. So I never lose an opportunity to talk about my sister's wines, whether you can ever taste them or not. If ever you're in Paris or anywhere in many different parts of France, that's available. But also, very exciting, her wines are going to be available in Canada. So Montreal to start with, but other parts of Canada perhaps later. But if ever you're listening to this podcast from Montreal, my sister's wines are going to be available in some fine restaurants very, very soon. Anyhow, she's working on a 2016 vintages, so I got to taste what's going on there. And unfortunately, quite sadly, the season's been exceptionally dry in the Roussillon region. Most of the harvest from many of the local winemakers around her, they've been very, very light, like a lot less grapes than previous years. On the other hand, no diseases, while volumes aren't very high. Only literally, last time I was over there was in May, and it hadn't rained a drop since this week in October. Until this week in October. So apparently high quality in grapes, they're just not going to be a lot of volume. Anyhow, back to the show, actually. Sorry, for anybody unfamiliar with the show, this is a podcast where I have conversations with like thinkers, designers, creators, and a variety of fields I'm personally and professionally interested in learning about. They tend to revolve around brand and marketing strategy, which is what I do well for a living. I'm the head of strategy for a digital creative studio called Rehab Studio in London. And I also talk to game designers because I'm really interested in gaming, particularly tabletop gaming, role-playing games, though not only, board games as well. I'm just really interested in discovering what makes my guests tick, what inspires them, how they got to where they are today, and all of that, and hopefully kind of fun and fairly light tone and you know, have interesting conversations to find out about the people I'm talking to. And make it interesting in a way that you obviously are interested in hearing about their lives and their achievements and their creations as well. So what else? This is a part where I'm going to ask you to give the show a rating or review. So if you listen to this through iTunes, or if you have an iPhone and you listen to this on the podcast app, basically, that also is linked to iTunes, and you enjoy listening to the podcast, it makes a hell of a difference if you give the show a review. One, I really enjoy the feedback. It really helps. It helps motivate me, and it helps other people find the show as well. So one thing I'm going to do in subsequent episodes, I did that in the first episode of the second season that's just starting now, is read a few reviews. So as soon as I'm going to get new reviews, I'll read them and give you a shout out, essentially. So if you just look up for Ice Cream for Everyone podcast in your favorite podcast listening app, you can leave the show a rating or review, ideally positive. If it's negative, I mean, just send me an email. You can find my email address and other ways to contact me. That's on my main website, my personal website for the Ice Cream for Everyone goodies, everything. So it's www.icecreamforeveryone.net. Everything spelled out, ice cream as in, you know, the cream. Icecreamforeveryone.net. And you can also find the Ice Cream Sunday newsletter that I send every Sunday on the main website that has like a little bit of what's going on in my life, a little bit of news, a little bit of advertising news, a little bit of just interesting stuff that I've been reading or looking at, a funny GIF as well. So that's over at icecreamforeveryone.net. We have a fun episode today with Jeremy, aka also known as Callum, host of the London-based gaming podcast, The Rollists. For all of you non-French speakers out there, a tabletop role-playing gamer in France is typically called a rolliste, from the French for role-playing game. So a role-playing game in French is jeu de rôle. So rolliste, a person who plays role-playing games, basically. It's kind of a bastardization of it, but it's just traditional to call it like that. And Callum has this podcast in London, and I met him through a group and through Twitter, because he's pretty active on Twitter as well. And he, for his 1 year anniversary of the podcast, asked me to interview him for his own podcast. So if you listen to his podcast, you've probably already heard this conversation, so you probably don't need to listen to it again. But unlike me in the past few months, he's been totally on top of his own podcast publishing, which I have not. We had a really fun conversation about his job in urban planning and design and architecture, how he got into role-playing games, the Rollies podcast, how that started, what he does for the podcast. Really, really interesting and fun conversation. It's been double posted, and I'll post the link to his podcast, where he edited and cut the conversation in a different fashion, because he also includes music, which is traditional on his podcast, which mine usually doesn't have that. So mine is just the whole conversation one way through. On his podcast, he also got a bunch of fun shout-outs from other podcasters who gave him shout-outs for his one-year anniversary. So I guess this is just going to be, well, another podcast where you get a shout-out for your one-year anniversary, Callum. Congratulations for 1 year of the Released. And here's the conversation that we had together, double-posted on the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. Enjoy. Welcome among
the Rollist.
Hello, Jeremy.
Hello, Willem.
So I'm interviewing you for your own podcast tonight.
Yeah, yeah, that's crazy.
Well, I think it's like actually not just crazy, but there's an opportunity and an occasion for it. I understand we're just approaching the anniversary date and your birthday, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. End of the month.
So you have some reason to be a little bit like, well, making this kind of special episode, focusing on yourself rather than on someone else.
Yeah, and I thought, well, if not now, when? Who knows? Maybe there won't be a second.
Well, year. Maybe you'll do it another year. Like, maybe you do it next year again.
Well, actually, I got an idea for next year, but...
But let's keep that one secret. Let's start with this particular one anyway, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I of course am absolutely like unprepared, because I completely like misunderstood what we were doing here, and I thought you were interviewing me, but no, I'm interviewing you for your own podcast.
And your own podcast. So
yes,
that be
we're also doing a double bill, because I'm going to be recording you and talking for my own podcast. All right, so I think one of your first questions is to ask people how you define and explain what a role-playing game is.
It's a bit early, but let's...
Is it too early? Oh, actually, should I talk about... Should I say who I am? Because everybody knows who you are. It's your podcast, right?
Well, I think I tend to speak too much when I'm interviewing people.
Oh, really?
Which is a flaw I've heard, which is common to a lot of French-speaking podcasters.
Oh, really?
Somebody told me that recently. But no, actually, I haven't talked that much about me, I think. So what would be your question?
Well, let's start with just, well, quickly, I feel the need to explain, even though this episode is going to be completely about you.
No,
right?
but just you're
quickly,
here to explain.
I'm Willem, by the way. I have another podcast called the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. And you know, well, obviously we know each other because we're both role-playing tabletop gamers and role-playing game enthusiasts, I guess.
Well, do we? Because we mostly know each other because, well, you actually buy the magic of podcast and the internet.
Yeah, gaming podcast.
Because that's like the second time we see each other.
Yeah.
And and you're from...
We've been interacting on Twitter way more than that. Every day we tweet at each other.
I don't tweet you that much. There's many people I tweet much more. Like Dirk the Dice from the Grognard Files, I tweet him much more than you.
Oh, really? I'm a little bit jealous now.
Yeah, but he's...
How much more do you tweet him?
Oh, I tweeted him maybe 10 times today, but he's much more responsive.
Oh, okay. Yes, it's curious. I'm playing a little bit hard to get. I try that.
And he doesn't tweet marketing stuff, so...
Yes, I do tweet a lot of marketing stuff. That is absolutely true. All right. Well, that's it about me. So let's just go back to you. So, how did you find out about role-playing games? When's your first, like, you know?
Well, my very first, entry in role-playing games is, I was a huge, Star Wars fan. really, really big. And I would have all these, the Art of Star Wars, books with the drawings of Ralph McQuarrie. I would have the soundtrack, and I would have technical manuals with the plans of the Death Star and the Millennium Falcon. And I was also a hobbyist, so I would scratch model them, I would model those things from the plans sometimes.
When's the first time you saw Star Wars? You remember that?
I wouldn't. I just remember that I saw them in a weird order. Okay. I mean, I saw A New Hope first.
Was that TV or, you know, the cinema? Yeah, cinema or TV?
It wasn't TV, VHS tape. And I think it already said episode 4 at the time, on the VHS tape. And then, I saw the first one, A New Hope, hundreds of time.
Uh-huh.
And then I had a puzzle of Return of the Jedi and a flip book of Return of the Jedi with a vinyl.
Yeah.
It took a long time for me to see The Empire Strikes Back and finally Return of the Jedi. And I was really confused by the episode 4-3-1 thing. Yeah. So it was really weird for me, but
I remember the same thing, actually. When I first saw Star Wars, I don't know if it was the first time, but I had the same reaction as in, you know, you see episode 4 and I was like, whoa, wait, I've not seen the other ones.
Which personally I find is brilliant.
Yeah.
And I like the idea when I think it's missing sometimes, nowadays. I like the idea of getting a story from the middle. Okay. I like when things are told in a way, and that's the thing of Star Wars, I find. They tell you things in a way that there are things they won't explain to you, but you are just diving into that universe, which is much bigger than what you see. You just have a window on something,
yeah,
which is much bigger, which is also something I liked even with comics, American comics, and even before that with French and Belgian comics. My favorite comics were the ones like Tunique Bleue, or Scar Moustache, where you had a mention of, you know, you would have a little asterisk and which would say, a page note which would say, see other book to know what they are actually talking about.
Yeah.
And so I love that about Star Wars. I love ignoring a lot of stuff, and I loved reading books and stuff telling more about things, but each new door open would open on a number of other doors. So the more you find out about it, the more you feel like you have more to discover. And along those readings, one day, I think it was in a video game magazine.
Okay.
They were making suggestions for Christmas gifts or something. And there was Star Wars West End Games, Star Wars D6 from Descartes in France and Belgium.
Which is a French publisher.
Yeah, book. And I asked for it to my parents. And since I was a spoiled child, I did receive it. Although I was told, that's a rather expensive book. And I had this book and it was
so you didn't know what a role-playing game was when you ordered it. You just saw the ad for the book.
Yeah, not at all. I had before that, I had one of the fighting fantasy book.
Right.
But I didn't even went all through the book. So, and that was the only one I had. But I ended up with that tabletop RPG book, which I read.
How old were you then?
I'm not sure. I guess 12, 11, maybe cool. Older. I don't know. But, we were confused because it was a game, but there was no, you didn't have any PCs, board, nothing. And there was a lot of explanation and it was really confusing. So I think on the night, the same evening, my mother read it with me and we never played it because we were confused, but I still loved the book because I would read about, TIE fighters, the manufacturer of TIE fighters and X-Wings, and I would read more stuff about that. But my curiosity was started then. And then I think it's very different nowadays, but at the time there was no internet at all, so I did try to find role players. I went to a club in my hometown in Gosley. There was a youth.
Sorry, where is Gosley?
Gosley in Charleroi, Belgium, in Wallonia. That's where I grew up. And
that's the French speaking part of Belgium, right?
Yeah, that's the French speaking part. This club, I went there to ask to play with them. Mm-hmm. They were not the most welcoming, I must say. And they told me, well, we got a, I guess they told me it was a one shot, although I don't remember the term from them, but they would have a one shot of AD and the Advanced Dungeons and Dragons as part of a big exhibition in my hometown. But it's a big exhibition hall where they've got every year exhibition, but it's called a leisure exhibition. So you've got people selling travels, you've got any kind of and sort of leisure. It's mostly about traveling, and you got a stand representing Greece.
There's also games as well.
A few there this time. And this guy came to my place to create a character, a wizard. I can only imagine how weird. It was weird for me, so it was probably very weird for my mother as well. And so he created my character, and then I went to this exhibition and I played this game in the middle of the crowd, and I don't even recall it very well. And then after that, something much smaller than in Ghostly, I found it there. It was another exhibition about hobbyists, and there was also other role players. So there I did play Star Wars, which in the meantime, I sort of played with a friend in his kitchen, but not knowing what we were doing. And
right.
The session would last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I played it. And finally, years and years after that, I was on my final year of secondary school. And following something we did, I was invited with a few other friends to join the theater troupe of the school, because they didn't have enough boys. and there, when I entered, there was a guy who is called Stefan van Oegen, who ended up being one of my best friends, who was reading Casus Belli, and I knew Casus Belli, which is a French magazine for role players. And I said, oh, you got that? I always try to play. And then I finally played role-playing games with them. We had the first Star Wars session, which was perfect. And I died on the first session. And
So you're not game mastering that one? You're not GMing that? The first one?
The first one, I GMed it for the first time a couple of months ago, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I had...
Oh, in all that time, you didn't GM Star Wars?
Not this one, no. Not really. I prepared a scenario to...
Sorry, by this one, do you mean the game or that scenario?
The game.
Okay, cool.
The game. I didn't ever really master the game before a couple of months ago.
Cool.
So yeah, it's... Yeah,
that's funny.
It's weird.
I kind of just assumed, because you're such a Star Wars fan, that you probably were GMing it for a while, but...
I played it, and... And the thing is, it took me a long time before game mastering anything.
Okay.
Because I had good game master around me. So I needed to game master, and never crossed my mind. I was happy playing. And in some way, I prefer being a player to a game master.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So you're playing with some Star Wars, some Dungeons and Dragons, any other big games that you like, your favorites or?
Well, with those friends in order, so, Star Wars, and we had a total party kill on my first session. Then we played a bit of Nightcrawler, another French game.
Which I saw in your library. I have the same, like the first edition of Nightcrawler, which is a great game.
I rebought it from the game master at the time.
Did you?
And with the money,
mine's a little bit, it moved around, so it's a little bit worse for wear, not exactly mint condition.
I never mastered it, so that's why mine is in rather good condition as well.
Actually, all our English speaking listeners are probably your might not know about Nightcrawler. Did you talk about it in another episode, or
no?
Do you want to just quickly tell us?
Yeah, Nightcrawler is a game by a rather famous French author of role playing games called Croc, which we should discuss in a future episode. Actually, sure. It's quite a character. And this game, and Croc was working for Casus Belli, the magazine. And this game is it's medieval fantasy, but in an urban setting. And you can only play, if you play Dungeons and Dragons, you can only play rogues, but different types of rogues. So a rogue who would be a spy would be good at lying and finding information.
Essentially criminals, that's how they define it in the game, I think. You're just only playing criminals.
Yeah, so you mug people, or you are an acrobat and you enter mansions through the window, or you are a coffer piercer if you're a good mechanic, but everybody is a criminal. And so I rebought this one from my game master, who used the money to buy probably one of my, if not my favorite role-playing games, Legends of the Five Rings, which is a brilliant medieval fantasy game inspired by Asia, Japan, with a mix of a lot of Japan, but with quite a bit of China as well. We played against Star Wars, the Dark Strider campaign, which I loved also, which I mentioned quite a couple of times. I never played a lot of Dungeons and Dragons with those friends. They were playing it, but circumstances made that I didn't, and I was not that attracted to it.
Did you tend to, or do you tend to have a typical kind of character, or style of character? Do you know what I mean? Did you tend to choose the wise wizards or the fighters or anything like that? Or you really changed? Or
at first I guess I was playing kind of myself. I guess like everybody. Well, I mean by myself, I mean rather average characters. In the setting, that's what I mean.
So that Dark Strider campaign that you mentioned that you played for a long time, what was your character in Star Wars?
Well, we attempted twice to finish the campaign. I don't remember the first time, but the second time I was playing a woman. I was playing Kaya Adrumetrum, who's the captain of the ship. And actually, since then, I was told that I never realized it, but I tend to bully a bit people at the table and try and kind of lead groups quite often. And I was doing that without really realizing it. I thought I was following. So following that, I kind of embraced it instead of rejected it. And since then, since I game master also a bit more, now I'm trying to force myself to play very different characters. Trying to play, played an old man inspired by Johnny Cash in a campaign of Dark Earth.
Okay.
I played a hobbit in One Ring, which was quite fun. And now I'm playing my, since that famous, Advance and Dungeons Dragons, years and years after that, I'm playing my first wizard at Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, why didn't I never play that before? Actually, it brings a lot of color to Dungeons and Dragons, and myself and the people I've been playing with, I realized everybody kind of avoided wizards for some reason. So yeah, it's kind of a discovery.
Okay, cool. Really? And so I don't know, what are your main steps between there and, I don't know at what point you want to start talking about the podcasts, but you had a whole, career.
Maybe I should explain what I consider to be tabletop RPG.
Oh, now you're ready to answer that question.
Yeah, I think so.
Is it a good time? All right, cool. Let's talk about what is a tabletop RPG and how do you explain it to somebody who doesn't know what it is?
Sorry, I'm trying to stick to the formula.
Well, don't be sorry. It's good though. Please keep me on track for your own podcast.
I think it's going to be very hard for me to edit this one because
what do you mean?
I don't know you. Don't you hate hearing yourself on a podcast?
I got used to it.
Yeah, me too, but still, this one's going
to
have
a lot. I'm more used to it. Well, you're going to have a lot more of your voice on this one. It's going to be interesting. Do you typically pull out a lot of the episodes? I typically leave all of it.
Oh, no, I remove a lot.
Oh, you do?
Okay. I edit way too much. And I think that the early episode, you could really hear it. Okay. I was a bit too aggressive on the edit function.
I try my best because otherwise it takes me way too long to edit and I try to.
That's why I do one per month because I take an awful lot of time just for that. I mean,
I try to improve just having an interesting conversation as much as possible.
I remove all the sigh and all the, this one.
I stopped. I did that for a while, but I remove some of them now, but not all of them.
I still do too much. And the thing I remove a lot is the.
Yes, I do that. I do that. It takes me a bit.
Do you, no, what's funny is that you, I guess it's the same for you. You see them before you hear them on the Audacity. You can recognize the pattern on the.
I do that. But I know to pull them off before it starts. As much, but you know what? I don't take all of them out. Cause there is a certain amount of like it sounding natural if it's not super loud. But the smacking of the lips can be quite annoying. So anyhow, let's go back to the questions because people don't necessarily care about that.
What was the question?
The question was, how do you explain what a role-playing game is to people who don't know what it is? A tabletop role-playing game.
Yeah, okay. So a tabletop role-playing game is a storytelling game, which is played almost strictly verbally. You're sitting around a table. You are not wearing special clothes or anything.
You can if you want to.
You can. You can do a lot of things if you want.
Yeah.
There's a person telling a story who's going to play all the characters and you're going to meet and describe the context, the universe, everything which happens around you from the weather, the way space look like and this sort of things. And yourself, you're going to play a single character which you created and you're going to try to incarnate that character. And finally, to represent what you're good at or what you're bad at and or good or difficult the things you are confronted with are, there's a bit of statistics. Well, not statistics, but you use dices to determine whether or not you succeed or fail at the things you are attempting.
Yeah.
And of course, that's.
And of course, the games exist in all sorts of settings, including Star Wars and Dungeons and Dragons and the ones we were talking about.
And you can create your own if you want.
Yeah, of course. And a lot of people do, actually.
Yeah, and some people don't like drawing dice, so they don't.
Yes, also.
But that's another story.
All right, cool. What's the next question after that? What's the structure?
Well, I guess we could go with,
How about becoming a GM? That's typically the kind of profiles you talked about, like being a player a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And not for everyone, but there's a lot of players or people interested in tabletop role-playing games for whom I know it's a step to GM and to become the game master, the storyteller of your first game. So how did that happen for you? Particularly, you said it happened late, so.
Well, as I said, I had GMs all around me, and good ones. Mm-hmm.
What do you consider good? Good GM. What's a good GM?
Ah, good GM. A good GM is a GM who is fair and doesn't hesitate to kill your character. That's what I like. Not like Ayla from Dudeo Micro, who's been playing for months at Game of Thrones and she didn't kill nobody, no NPC or playing characters.
So I don't know that one is a podcast?
Yeah, Dudeo Micro. It's in French. So if you
want to. Okay. So it's an actual play?
It's not actual play. It's really cool. Yeah, she's got a blog for a long time of role-playing games, which, to be honest, I never read, but I believe it's quite popular. And she's got a small podcast where she just explained, today I was thinking about my future game, and she's a game master, and what am I going to do with my players? Oh, I've got this idea of mixing that game system with that setting.
Cool.
and produce that. And she explained all her games are going. And I must say about the Rollies podcast and her podcast, I find what she's doing amazing because she's on her own. She records herself alone. And that's something I'm entirely incapable of doing.
Did you try?
Well, not a full episode, but
it's more difficult, right?
Yeah, I record the credits like that. You know, I said the name of the songs I include in the podcast, and it's much easier now than it used to be. Although I was told recently that, you know, I'm starting to sound like a robot at the end. I'm too monotonic. But at the beginning, I was really struggling, and the first one are the results of maybe five different recording, and I would keep the best bit of each sentence, put them together to say, and this was Salter and Franco. You can find it on archive.org, but yeah, the archive.org could be from my third attempt, and the Salter and Franco from my first, because
I spent a lot of time editing.
Yeah, I spent too much time, but yeah, it's getting better. And Ayla, she does it like this. It seems not so natural, and it's really impressive.
Has she been doing it for a while? We should ask her some other time, actually.
Well, yeah, I don't know for how long she's been doing it. It's been a while she didn't put a new episode, because apparently she's struggling to keep the pace, and that's a challenge. I mean, that we were discussing that.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time.
Yeah, and that's why I try not to. I never thought I would do more than one per month.
Yeah,
because that's already a lot. But I'm really trying to be strict about that, to at least maybe some months there will be. So far, I'm quite happy with what I've done, but the idea is always better put something not great than not put something on that
mode. I agree. And so back to being a GM. We'll come back to the podcast afterwards.
So a GM, quite simply, one day I was really missing playing tabletop RPGs.
Did you have a break for a while, or...?
Yeah, with the studies, I studied not in my hometown, so I was far from the people I used to play, although I would see them still quite frequently.
What were you studying?
I studied in Tournai at the Institut Supérieur d'Architecture de Saint-Luc, so an architecture school.
Okay, cool.
In a medieval town in Tournai, which is quite popular with English tourists, apparently. They used to be quite a lot. And it's just across the French border. It's very close to Lille, where the Eurostar stopped. And that's from there. Most of my friends there were French. And even when I speak French, people tend to say that I've got a French accent. Mm. Well, at least I don't have an accent, which is the way French people tell you that you actually have an accent like their own. So I didn't have any players around me there. And then I moved to Brussels, and same thing there, no players around me. And at some point I said, okay, I'm going to master something myself, because it's easier to find players.
Yeah.
Than to find,
So did you gather friends who did not play tabletop role playing games, got them into it? Or did you meet some of the people who already played or?
Well, I went even further than that. I did have one friend, one regular gamer who was willing, interested to come all the way to Brussels, which is not a long way. I mean, it's within Belgium, so it's everything is 1 hour away from each other.
Okay.
But what I did first, I recruited my girlfriend, who's now my wife, Persephilia. We already told about that. I said, oh, you're going to try this thing. You're going to love it. And she was very confused by the whole thing. Uh-huh. And then I posted an ad on Couchsurfing, which is a website to, you can travel with it and stay at people's places. And I did that for a while. But what you can do also, they got a lot of events, which are quite cool. People just.
It's an original way to go at it. So you went, I wouldn't have thought of going to Couchsurfing to ask to look for gamers.
Well, that's, you know, cool. At the time, I was not on Facebook. I don't think I was on Facebook.
Was Facebook already around, or?
Yes, I think so. Maybe, yeah. Yeah, I think I was on Facebook. It was just the beginning. Mm. The beginning I was there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's quite fascinating to think now how different it is. If you like something, whatever, playing music or tabletop RPG, something very niche And you got this incredible tool to find people who are interested in that.
Facebook, meetup groups, forums, Reddit. There's loads of things.
The podcast, you can listen to people playing, explaining what it is about.
You can find groups to play with on Google Hangouts and on Skype, etc. Like, even if you don't have anybody nearby, there's loads of ways to find people interested in the same things you are.
It's crazy how the world was different not so long ago.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mastered a small short campaign of Nephilim, another game I played before for a long time.
Yeah.
And
do you want to give us a quick tobo? I don't know if you talked about it on your podcast before, have you?
Well, I'll give it a quick summary, but one day I'll probably have a full episode just dedicated to this one.
Yeah.
So Nephilim is a contemporary occult game. So you play the game in the... At the time, we were playing in the 90s.
Yeah.
And it revolves about around... Well, you play beings, magical beings, which used to live in the Atlantis before the fall of Atlantis, following the Earth being hit by an asteroid. And those beings, which are of pure magic, from that time, they could not be their own. They had to get inside humans to possess them, literally, to be and act in the world. So, and when you create them, and those beings also, either they are in a human, or they are trapped. They are trapped in an object. And if the object is not activated, they can be trapped for centuries, millennia, or eternity, actually. And so when you create your character, you say, oh, well, my character, he was at the battle of Troy. He's been also around during the French Revolution, and he's around now today. So you play this character who's been living through different stories, a bit like a Highlander, except a Highlander does not go to sleep for ages. So, and the whole game is about gathering, understanding what's going on and gathering information, etc. And my pseudonym, Callum, was my character at
that game. All right, cool.
Yeah.
So all the characters are based on the elements.
Yes.
Which one was yours?
Air.
Okay, cool.
I love that character. So the game is sort of about finding out secrets, etc. Yeah. But
a lot of the game was based on... Well, a large part of the inspiration was Umberto Eco's Foucault's Pendulum.
Yeah.
For the people who've read it, which is a fantastic book. And actually, I mentioned this because I also used to game master Nephilim, by the way. The system's very simple. It's based on Chaosium. So the same as Call of Cthulhu or RuneQuest, very similar system. Adapted a little bit for the character creation.
Yeah, percentile system.
Yeah. Percentile systems are 2d10s. Yeah. So, tell us more about your character.
I think you'll come for the special Nephilim.
Oh, yes, actually. Yes, we don't want to give out too much. So, but
that character, I was really into it because he was a character. It was really about the pleasure of discovering things and learning stuff. And I thought that's why I keep using the pseudonym, because I think it matches my personality a lot. A bit again, like I was saying about Star Wars, I just love the idea of finding out stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And how do you prepare as a game master or as a player? Is there a type of game and role playing games you usually like? You know, because there's a lot of different ways of approaching games, and some people talk about the kind of hack and slash of the going down a dungeon, killing monsters, getting treasure, doing a lot of dice, like the simulationist, like if you think about the Forge theories, or we don't necessarily have to refer to that, but like, do you have a special preferred kind of game, like more narrative, more interpreting characters, more throwing dice and killing monsters? How do you...
You had to bring up the Forge, didn't you?
I had to bring up the Forge. I've not even read all of the Forge stuff, so I just talk about it because I know friends who do, but that's about it. I just like to be a bit, like, sound like I know more than I do.
That's a good way to do that. I can play a lot of and master a lot of different types of games. I'm mastering a Dungeons & Dragons 4 edition right now.
Yeah.
Which I play as much as I played as a board game, a tactical board game with more storytelling around it. Because the 4th edition of Dungeons & Dragons is a bit like that. Although, yeah. And yeah, I think I don't really have a sort of story or universe I like more, a style I like more.
Okay.
I think what might define my way of game mastering is that as a game master, I'm still a player. So when I started game mastering, I realized how much things I thought were objective and not controlled and spontaneous were actually controlled by game masters.
Yeah.
And my reaction to that as a game master, I never write a story. Well, when I do write a story, I try to make it so that failure, I don't know what the player is going to do.
Yeah.
And there's a number of ways that all things can go. So myself as a game master, I'm playing the game, rolling dice. And if something happens, well, I've got to deal with it.
So a lot of improvisation.
Yeah, quite a bit. Well, it's not improvisation because I think a lot about that before the game.
So you do a lot of preparation?
Well, I don't prepare at so much as writing stuff, etc. But right. I keep thinking about it when I go to sleep, when I take the bus, whatever moment I would start thinking, okay, so, those guys, they're supposed to meet that person. Okay. Let's say worst case scenario, they don't even meet that person. What will happen, etc.
Yeah.
So I try to anticipate all the possibilities before, which is impossible, but still an excellent exercise to be ready to land on your feet when your players are going into one direction.
Cool.
So yeah.
So how did where did the podcasting start? Did you listen to podcasts about gaming before, or how did that whole thing?
Yes. I started listening to podcasts before moving to London.
So how long ago was that?
So that was 5 years ago.
Okay.
After my, well, maybe just rolling back a tiny bit.
Yeah.
So I was living in Brussels, and I was not entirely happy with my career there. So I wanted to do more things. I worked for a bit abroad. I worked for a bit in Paris, which I really enjoyed, but just for 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came back, I just wanted to go away, leave Belgium and go in a place where there would be more ambitious projects for architects.
Yeah.
And Pacifilia, my girlfriend at the time, well, she was up for it also. And initially we thought we would move quite quickly to London. But when I started looking for a job, it was what we could call the first recession of the last two. And at the time I was told by recruiters, it's a bit tough at the moment, recruitment. You got a very good resume, but there's going to be a lot of people with a similar resume who happen to be English. And the people will be more interested to hire someone with a similar experience, but already used to how things are done in England.
Yeah.
And so he told me you should wait 6 months for the recession to be over. So that was 7 years ago, 6 years ago. You should wait 6 months and then try again. And at the time I was thinking, well, I don't want to just wait. I want to be constructive with that time. So what I found is part-time studies. At first, I didn't set my mind on London, but the place where I found part-time studies, which I could take while continuing to work and live in Belgium, was at the University of Westminster, and it was in urban design. So it was going in a broader scale, which what I was looking for also. And for a year, I came once per month to London for a day of class. And workshop. And in the meantime, each month, I had a lot of work at home and over the internet with other students to become an urban designer. And I did that.
Was your work and studies in architecture or urban design useful in your role-playing games? Did you use it for, I don't know, any kind of technical drawings or maps or dungeons or anything like that?
I think tabletop RPG and theater as well.
Oh, do you used to do theater as well?
Yes. Oh, yes. Cool. That's how I got started. I did that in parallel to my studies, starting from my last year of secondary school.
Uh-huh.
And tabletop RPG helped a lot for the presentations, for coming and you present your projects and you talk about it to people.
Right.
It's funny, but I feel tabletop RPG has been more useful to my career
than the other way around.
The other way around. In a way, actually, sometimes I find it difficult to look at dungeon maps and dungeon plans and be like, but where's the bathroom? Where do they sleep? Where do they eat? Where's the plumbing? The waste out and those sort of things. Yes. And I also had issues with Game Master, a good friend. He mastered Call of Cthulhu, the Mask of Nyarlathotep. And I would question his architecture all the time. And he kicked me out. No, he didn't kick me out. I left the table for different reasons. But later...
Because you would go like, hey, wait, but didn't you say the room was to the left before?
Okay, wait, let's explain the situation. You're told that you are in a newspaper office in New York.
Right.
You are in their office inside.
Okay.
Okay. Something. So what do you picture?
A floor with glass desks, cubicles, corner offices.
Yeah, it's the 1930s, but you said...
1930s had cubicles, didn't they? Little partitions, didn't they?
No, I don't think so. I don't know, but not glass.
Maybe not.
But
no glass. Okay.
No, but long story short, I picture when he just said that, and it's interesting about tabletop RPG, the way you describe things and what people actually picture.
I actually don't know. Now that you mentioned it, I don't know how the 1930s offices were. I have an idea. But.
Well, what I did picture is a office block, an old one, really? And I picture myself being at the 10th floor with a newspaper when I got out of the building, thinking it was on fire, I was very surprised I was getting out of a terraced house. So it was just a little house in the middle of the suburb. So
he described it as a house.
When we got out of it, but not before we got in. So that was a bit confusing. But and later, I was not there anymore, but Persifilia was there. And the game master made the character enter through the ground floor, and he had swapped by mistake the plans of the ground floor and the first floor. And Persifilia did notice that something was at foot with that building because the bedrooms should not be on the ground floor.
That's funny.
So
then you moved to London.
Before moving to London.
Okay. So you finished your urban planning course.
I did my urban planning course, but.
So quickly, just because I don't really know, but urban planning is really like, or urban design is really like, we're just organizing where it's like playing SimCity, right? It's like looking at where the streets should be and what kind of neighborhood should we be. Like, how do you define it? Like a short summary.
Architects, they do buildings.
Yeah.
It's a bit different in France. In Belgium, it's more broad. But in the UK, pretty much architects do buildings.
Yeah.
Urban designer do city blocks.
Okay.
And the streets between them. And they decide the general shape of the building and the type of use that should be in the building. So it's really the street and the general shape of neighborhoods, let's say. And then above that, you got master planning, which a lot of urban designer do, which is a complete new piece of city or a new city being designed, like Canary Wharf, brand new piece of city, or a new city like Milton Keynes, to name a recent example, or an eco town, like they're talking about doing a new one all the time. And then you got planner who are doing more regulations and zoning. So,
okay. So they decide like if a zone is residential, commercial.
Yes, yes. But all this stuff tend to overlap. So planners will do a bit of urban design. Urban designer will do a bit of architecture to some extent and a bit of planning. An architect will do a bit of urban design when they do their stuff. And so that's sort of the skills which are overlapping with each other's. To enter the university, I had to pass a test in English, the IELTS. And to improve my understanding of English further than what I had at the time, I started listening to my first podcast.
Right.
And that was The History of the World in 100 Objects on the BBC. And I listened to a few of those. I don't remember what other podcasts besides this one at the time. And then I forgot about it. And I moved here. I started working and commuting. And I started then listening to more stuff while working, my work would allow. I started with the Penny Arcade DLC because I was reading the webcomic. And I really like that because it's not so much about the webcomics they're making, it's about they're talking about their daily life. And I thought it was very fascinating to have two guys in the US telling about how they create something and how their kids are great at Minecraft and it's funny for them because they are kind of celebrities, but their children don't care at all about what they do. What they care about is famous people on YouTube.
And they
talk about a number of things in their life, and so it was really nice. And much later, I was also listening to a show by Laurent Garnier called It Is What It Is, which is a radio show. But
the DJ.
Yeah, Laurent Garnier,
yeah.
A French DJ.
Yeah.
And it was great to find out about music because I love music, but I love a lot of stuff, but I always need people to present it to me.
I'm like that too. I'm really lazy. That's why, I've talked about it in the last. Did you use Mixcloud at all?
Mixcloud, no.
I really like Mixcloud exactly for that reason, because there's really good DJs and they put playlists together in different genres. Mm-hmm. So I follow people who put good music and then they have like hour-long playlists and I just listen to that and it just...
Yeah, it's cool.
It's cool that way.
And I really like with It Is What It is that, he talks a bit about his life, a tiny bit. He picks songs according to his mood, like...
That's cool.
He's got an episode which is, I'm having the worst day, journée de merde. He's got one where he goes to Japan and etc. And it was very cool too. So that influenced a bit the podcast. That's why I wanted also to put a bit of music in there.
Okay, cool.
And then another couple which I really like and influenced the podcast and led to me at some point say, "Oh, I'd like to try to do something." The first one is Weekly Planet, which I pay an homage to at the end of each episode with the "What are you reading? What are you gonna read?" Again, two Australian guys just talking about comics and movies, and they're quite cool, and you feel like you are in a room with them.
Yeah,
and
that's one of the things I do like about conversation based podcasts as well.
Yeah. It's
sometimes
nice.
It's a bit hit and miss. It really depends. If you have to kind of identify with the people that you're listening to a certain extent.
Yeah, and it's quite funny because I've been listening to Voix d'Altarit for a long time. As we said, we just met twice.
Yeah.
And I've been listening to you talking with the people of Voix d'Altarit for a while. So it's quite funny to have you, to be in a room with you. So.
Well, it's good to be hanging out. It's nice to be doing it face to face as well.
Really made the motivation is Radio Free Burrito.
Okay. I don't know that one. But I think did you tell me about it?
Last time?
You must have told me.
Yeah. I heard
the name before.
It's by Will Whedon. So
the
actor who played, was in Stand By Me and he's very famous for playing Wesley Crusher in Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah. And of course, The Tabletop Show.
Of course, yes, and Big Bang Theory, and
was he on that?
He's playing himself. But
I've got into that one.
Radio Free Burrito is just something he does for the sake of it, just because he enjoys doing it, and it's a bunch of nonsense and it's really bits and pieces of unrelated stuff. It's him reading stuff. It's him putting on music he really likes.
I should check it out because I do like Will Wheaton usually. I read his blog from time to time. He writes good blog posts as well.
Yeah, and it's quite touching, you know, even because he had, well, not an easy life all his life. And at the same time, while Will Wheaton, well, when I was younger with my friends, Wesley Crusher was not the most popular character for us at the time. So we would be, very critical of the character. And you feel like, yeah, I'm critical of a character and that's okay. But you don't realize at some point there's an actor behind that. And there's probably a lot of people being critical of the character. And even ourselves to some extent, you don't realize you're talking about a real person.
Yeah.
It's like the actor who, nobody is treating the actor who's playing, Joffrey in Game of Thrones, like the terrible person he is, but
he's playing a bad character though, so he's probably a little bit more prepared for that. I don't know, but maybe.
I would think so. I think people realize a bit more that he seems like a very nice guy. But yeah, Will Whedon tells about his story and it's a bunch of nonsense. It's stuff like the first one I listened to, he's washing the dishes and recording himself speaking as he washes the dishes. And in there he was saying, well, you know, it's important to do stuff. Just do stuff. Stop being scared about what people are going to think, etc.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just go ahead and do stuff. I took him on his word and I thought, okay, let's do something and I will force myself to get something every month. The first one might not be good, the second one, etc.
Sorry, before you listen to that, were you already thinking of doing your own podcast or not really?
Yes, I was. The idea was floating because, well, I thought it was quite interesting. We had a big celebration of our club here in London, La Guilde des Rôlistes Francophones de Londres. Yep. We had the 10 years.
Woo-hoo.
And it was a couple of years ago, but it was really nice because we had, first of all, it's a very nice club because beyond the people you meet here in London, I've met people either because they were coming back just for a weekend or because I would go myself to Barcelona and there's Canard there who used to be a member. I didn't knew him when he was in London, but yeah. When I went to Barcelona with another member of the guild, we met him and it clicked immediately. It keeps clicking immediately with all the members of La Guild. And for the 10 years, Canard came from Barcelona for the celebration. We had people coming from, we had Kundin coming from Devon.
Cool.
We had people coming from Switzerland, Germany, Hong Kong, maybe, I'm not sure.
Really?
Japan.
Oh, awesome.
And since then I've been to Japan and I visited, Nicolas and Diane who live there. And I thought, isn't that?
It's very cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. And it's really weird because you have this group of people who met just because of tabletop RPG. They all speak French, but they live in London.
Yeah.
And this kind of microcosm is fascinating. So I thought I would really like to tell the story of that because that's really nice. So. Initially, the Release Podcast was supposed to be mostly about that.
Oh, okay.
And then quite quickly it expanded because in the meantime, I met people from Roleplay Heaven. I met Gary, who is extremely supportive of the Release Podcast. And I wanted to expand things to say, well, there are other role players in London and it's really cool. And recently I joined a couple of groups on Facebook. One is about role players in Mexico. One is about role players in Thailand. And I've been looking for other groups like that, but weirdly, it's quite difficult to find. But it's great to see pictures of a bunch of friends in Thailand playing Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And the same in Mexico, etc. But the reality of
everywhere.
Everywhere, anywhere, everywhere. Please send your pictures if you are playing and tell us what you love. But because the reality of it is that a bit like, I guess, like theater, but it's very difficult to have a view of what's happening in other countries in tabletop RPG. From outside the US, you can have an idea of what's going on in the US because there's a lot of shows and podcasts. It's not on mainstream television or anything, but
yeah, a lot of conventions, a lot of events, etc. Well, and of course, you know, the geek. Well, tabletop RPG usually functions within a kind of geek undercurrent culture as well. So as long as that's strong, tabletop RPGs are strong too. Plus, they've been getting stronger with all the games on Kickstarter, and more people have been finding out about it, I think. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, no, you don't interrupt it. It's just, you have no idea what's going on in other countries. I have no idea what's going on in Italy in terms of role-playing games. I had an idea of France because I speak French and Belgium, and they're like conjointed twins sometimes. Yes. So you share your media, but... Otherwise, what do they play in the Netherlands? I found out that they play the Dark Eye in Germany. Apparently, it's popular. L'œil noir.
Yeah, it comes from there in the first place.
I know a few.
They just crowdfunded a new remake edition. Apparently,
yeah, very popular one. Yeah. In Spain, when I went to Spain, I met Canard there, and we recorded an episode. But basically, he didn't know so much about what was going on there either. Except a couple of games. And there again, Aquelarre, a game which was crowdfunded for its English translation. And that seems to be a fascinating game, a rather adult game, but,
horror game or?
It's sort of gothic. It's 16th or 15th century. Canard wrote a full follow-up article on the subject for the website. But, And I had never heard of that game. I really like the idea, and I'm very happy when I read reviews saying, oh, that's nice to hear what's going on in London. And it's also fascinating how through the podcast, I've met people via the internet.
Yeah.
People I haven't actually met yet, but we exchange and we discuss what we're playing, etc. So it's quite nice.
Yeah, brilliant. And so you got started. Now this is going to be the 12th episode.
Yes.
Yeah,
12th episode.
So it's going to be just over a year now.
Yeah, it's going to be it's going to be a year at episode 13, I guess. Yeah. I think the first was
thing. Congratulations, you managed to maintain once a month, right?
Thank you. Well. That's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, particularly it seems like you're editing a lot.
Yeah.
Which is good. But plus you're adding music and choosing music probably takes a while too, right?
Actually, that's very quick.
Oh, is it?
But yeah, it is. But it's funny because it's not like I'm listening to a lot of music and I hear something and I'm thinking, oh, this would be nice for that episode. I never know in advance what an episode's going to be like.
I was just going to ask, did you plan your episodes? Did you know? I mean, you of course had an idea, as you explained, that you're thinking of at least documenting the beginning of the Guilde des Rôlistes Francophones. But then it expanded from that. And I know you had several conversations with, either gamers, publishers. So you talked to Chris Birch from Modifius Publishing, which is quite popular these days. You talked to Gary from the Roleplay Haven. You did an episode at Dragon Meet, the convention in London as well. How did you plan for the episodes? Did you just come along month to month? Did you think about it in advance? Or
well, I think in advance and depending of different... Well, what I plan in advance is the subject of an episode.
Okay.
So I know I've got a list of subjects I'd like to cover at some time.
Okay.
And I've got also a list of people I want to interview.
Yeah.
But the way each episode happened is extremely random. The first one was I knew I would start with Kandin because he's the founder of the Guilde des Rôlistes and he's a great guy. So I thought it would be great to start with that. That made sense. Since I wanted I liked things which are not monolithic but with a lot of stuff and a bit all over the place. Had the idea at the time to record ourselves going to see Ant-Man with a couple of friends, most of them.
The spider. I remember one of I listened to that.
I shouldn't re-listen to it, but yeah.
Or was it another one? So when you went to talk to people in front of the cinema.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one, right?
Well, I did that.
You did that for another one as well, for the Avengers, maybe.
Yeah, well,
or Star Wars, I can't remember.
I did it for Star
Wars.
I did it for them all except Avengers.
Okay, so it must have been one of the others.
And I redid it for Civil War.
But you went to talk to random people in front of the cinema and, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I did that. That's an example. I think the worst has been the best episode. So Dragon Meat, for instance, which I think is my best so far. And I think the feedback I received from people was the most enthusiastic. So I went to Dragon Meat, thinking, that would be nice, an episode about Dragon Meat. So I go to Dragon Meat and I ask questions to people and I record them and I do something with it. And that's my plan. And then at some point, maybe I should ask before if I can record something. And then I'm told, he's a free entrance. I already had an entrance. Okay. Give it to a friend. I go there and I do, some actual play that could be fun, to tidbits to put here and there. So I go to a Deadland session. The sound there is not very great, so I didn't kept it. But then I'm in there in the middle of Dragon Meat, very shy, very, oh my God, what am I doing? And I started with the role play Heaven, just the two girls holding their stand. And there was two Italian role players living here in London. So it was perfect for the podcast, but totally unplanned. And they tell me about games.
That's cool.
And then I tweeted with the hashtag Dragon Meat, saying, anyone wants to answer a few questions? And then Cole Porter, who just a guy who was attending, an American from Utah, accepted to answer a few questions, which was another perspective, three night, and quite a coincidence because I had run into total stranger also in Barcelona, who were from Utah. So again, I wanted to interview just people in this. That's something early in the podcast I wanted to do. I wanted to ask questions to people during my commute every day.
Oh, really? Well, that's crazy.
Yeah,
that's
complicated, right? It's a bad idea, but I still.
I like to get interesting people that you're not freaking out. And plus, when you're commuting in the morning with so many people.
Yeah, it's not the. Well, actually.
I had crazy ideas for my own podcast before. I tried to do stuff that I never published as well, but anyway, I could keep going. Sorry.
No, it's just cool. The worst for me with that was the Dungeons and Dragons. I recorded at Westfield Stratford, and there you are in a context which is absolutely not geek at all, and you just start stopping people like you are stealing the Bible or I don't know, and
asking them about Dungeons and Dragons. I didn't listen to this one.
I was just I had a list of questions. I had a quiz for them about Dungeons and Dragons to see their reactions, etc. And
it's difficult to do that, isn't it?
But that's the thing, including tonight. It's like, okay, I've got this idea, I throw myself into it.
It's good.
And then I feel like it's the worst idea.
But you're trying. That's awesome. It's only by trial and error that you get done.
Right? Yeah. And coming back to Dragon Meat, it's been awesome because at Dragon Meat, I interviewed a few people who were very nice. Then, somebody mentions Shadows of Esteron. So I thought, I'm going to go to the stand of Shadows of Esteron and ask a few questions. And the guy's got a French accent. So he probably will be nice about another person speaking French. And so I go to the guy, would you like to answer a few questions? So what's your name? Oh, my name is Nelly Ann. Okay, Nelly Ann. Because I don't know rubbish about, I'm really disconnected at the same time from the news of role playing game beside some other podcasts I would listen to. So Nelly Ann, that's nice. Told me about Shadow of Esteron. And then I checked later on the day and I realized, he's one of the author.
Yeah.
Of the game, of course. Yeah. So, I got the author of Shadow of Esteron. That's really cool. And Elian mentions Cubicle 7 when I talk about translation of French games to English. And they had Shin, I never know how to pronounce it. But I go to Cubicle 7 and say, who are you? My name is Dominic, etc. Nice. So you work at Distance. Yeah, I own Cubicle 7. So, okay.
But then when you really get into it, you start realizing that, you know, the people that we kind of admire for certain things that we really like in role-playing games, it's not a big industry. So actually, the companies that we're talking about are not very big. Even a lot of people still have a day job because they can't really live off it. Yeah, some people do live off it, but...
And Steve Jobs is selling his iPhones himself. Yes, exactly. And then, after a number of several interviews like that, I go to a game because I was there to enjoy myself. So I booked myself for two games. And since I loved playing a Song of Ice and Fire Game of Thrones, I went for that game, which was in the evening. And there were a few people. I said, oh, do you mind if I record? And Sam Webb, who mastered the game, he mastered the game, which was extremely fun. I mean, the players were awesome. We had a very limited story scenario, but everybody went into really playing their characters. And then I sliced it up in the episode between the interviews. And because I'm crazy, I'm starting introducing voice of sound of wind, doors, etc. And I was really proud with the result. But this episode, nothing was planned with it. Everything just kind of happened. And each time, the difficulty, I know, it's about, what's funny after episode 7 is that I liked it so much that I was very stressed about the next one, because until then, each episode was sort of better than the previous one.
Yeah.
And this one, I was really, am I going to top that? And I kind of freaked out. And that's why I went in the street to ask people a question about Dungeons and Dragons, because I was trying to create something. And then the recording was bad, but yeah, okay.
What's next for the next year? Any other special projects? Are you going to go interview people about some crazy topic, or what are you thinking of? Are you happy with the progress so far anyway?
Yeah, I'm very happy with the thing. I mean, it's beyond anything I was hoping for. And
you're getting some good feedback as well, right?
That would be the only sort of disappointment. I'm getting very encouraging, very good feedback. That's not the issue. I would welcome more feedback.
You're listening to this, people. Callum wants more feedback.
Yeah. And more, people can be critical and not just about the quality of the sound. So yeah. To be honest, the quality of the sound, I hear it myself. Probably the first to hear it when it's not perfect but
yeah, the content, we're talking about the content. Yeah.
And then tell me if it inspires questions to you, or you disagree with stuff, or you'd like to hear more about something, or people are interviewed. I'd like to engage even more.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the future of the podcast, and you're part of it. Mm-hmm. In the sense of the first people, the people I already engage with the most,
yeah,
are actually other podcasters.
Right.
So it's very likely, I hope so, to do things again, more things with the Grognard Files, who's extremely nice, and I love his show, so maybe we will do more stuff. I hope to record something with you.
We're doing it right now. We talked earlier before we started recording about doing something together at Dragon Meet this year, also with the Grognard Files, and maybe with the Weltarid. I mean, we'll see. This is a early we'll to say, see right?
That's a wild idea, another one. But that would be cool. I think
it's not that crazy, though. I don't think it's that crazy.
Well, you know, projects, to talk about projects, and it goes a bit in that vein. I got a Patreon now.
Yeah.
And it's not something... it's not something I'm putting there to make money or anything, but I thought it was a way for, it was a form of way for people, another way for people to say that they liked it. And if they put just $1 per month, as long as they put $1, as long as they do it, that means they still enjoy it. So it's an ongoing support. Yeah. But looking at other podcasts, what I thought was interesting with that is that I could set goals and make suggestions for the future of the podcast.
Yeah.
So, and that's
what's your next one again? You told me just before we started recording, but.
So the first goal, was to be able to buy a new microphone, which is one of those two. And mm-hmm. The second one is to have a little money to pay for the expense for me going to another convention than Dragon Meet, something in England. Probably the UK Games Expo in Birmingham. I understand that it's quite big.
It's a big one. It's just passed actually a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and I saw
everybody. I missed it. I couldn't go.
Yeah, I never been. I saw just pictures from everybody there. So yeah, paying for the hotel, etc. And so that's one of the goals. And there's a goal for improving the website. And again, that's something I would welcome comment about. What would you like to see change with the website? And then I've got goals there which become more ambitious, which are, well, maybe pay a part of the expense to go to a convention or a big event outside of the United Kingdom. Maybe, I don't know, going to Essen or going to a French convention and record something there. Yeah. And that would be something interesting to discuss in the podcast. And then we are far in the goal. But, there's one goal which would be to try to invite authors, maybe from France or somewhere in Europe, here in London, to come to Dragon Meet and interview them. So I would pay. I would use patronage to pay for part of their expense. These are some of the ideas in the patrons and. Yeah. And the ideas are really there as a suggestion for listeners to go there, check them out, and even don't contribute, but they can even say, oh yeah, that's a good idea, or I don't like it for this or that that reason.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Cool. That sounds exciting anyway. There's like a lot of growth and a lot of exciting projects for the podcast, which is cool.
Yeah, again, you meet a lot of people and it's quite nice because it doesn't feel like, I don't feel like we are in a competition.
No, it's collaborative. It's like everybody's participating. It's cool.
Yeah. So I've been invited to, your podcast, Ice Cream for Everyone. And, I will be, already mentioned it, but I should be in something called, Never Got Around It.
Okay.
Another podcast about where I will talk about Sandman, which I read for the occasion. Today I received a message for a couple living in London. They got their podcast. It's called Aaron and In Bed with Aaron and Helen. And these are two people a lot into sport, fighting sport. And they're also interested into immigrants and expatriates here in London. And maybe we'll do something together. It would be fun to... Well, it's nice because they've got such a different perspective on things.
Yeah.
But I would be very keen to show them a tabletop RPG based on martial arts, etc. And then maybe they can train me into boxing or something.
So I think it's just about time to ask what you're reading at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a long one. So what am I reading?
That's correct, right? That's the right question.
Yeah. Yes. What am I reading? And then it's what are you going to read?
Yes. What are you reading now? What are you going to read?
So I'm going to cheat as usual. I'm not reading, but it's been a while. I wanted to go. I finally went to the Globe, the Shakespeare's Globe here on SoftBank. And I saw an excellent version of A Midsummer Night Dream.
Cool. It's embarrassing. I worked right behind it for years and I still haven't been. I used to go to the pub right there, the Swan, all the time, but I haven't been to see a show.
It's just £5.
I know. It's what everybody's been telling me for years. It's embarrassing.
It's just £5. It's nice. It's not overcrowded. So I guess you can even have a last minute ticket or something. And, I don't know if it's still on because I've seen another play there since then, but Midsummer Night Dream, it's really nice.
Yeah.
And also I was interested because I played in the Midsummer Night Dream.
Wow.
When I was a teenager.
Did you play?
A small part. I play Aegeus, which is the father of the daughter who goes, and I played an elf also. I had white feathers in my hair and was painted blue, and I wore a dress, and I was among teenagers, although I was bearded and much older than them, and we were dancing.
So did you read it again, or you're not answering the question?
No, I didn't read, so I went to see the play.
That's cool.
So what about you, Willem? What are you reading?
What I'm reading right now?
Yeah.
I am reading A View from the Cheap Seats, the new collection of nonfiction work of Neil Gaiman. He was in London a few weeks ago, and I booked a ticket for the event at the Union Chapel, where he was talking with, I can't remember her name right now. The author of the Time Traveler's Wife. So they were in, so they do events regularly for book promotions together. And it was really cool. And I started reading that. I'm in the middle of that. I'm also reading Voyage au bout de la nuit, de Céline.
Okay.
But the collection of nonfiction from Neil Gaiman is a collection of curated stuff from his whole career of speeches, articles, prefaces, intros, a lot of different things. Beautifully written, very, very inspiring. Very cool.
Well, I really like Sandman from him. It was it's the second thing I was reading from him before I read Good Omens, but it was co-written with Terry Pratchett.
Yeah, which is a fantastic book. It's a lot of fun.
And what are you going to read?
I'm going to read... I've got so many on my reading list. It's ridiculously embarrassing. Well, one thing I'm going to read for sure, because I just got some more role-playing game books. I only just started it, but I got the brand new edition of Mindjammer, the Sarah Newton book, which is supposed to be really good. It's a sci-fi game setting. And the new version of the second edition of 7C that was just released. And I started both of them, as in I only read a few pages. But that's part of the things I'm going to read next, yeah.
And master for La Guilde des Relis Francophones de Londres.
Yes, probably at some point, as soon as I've got a few other things sorted. I've not been playing a lot of role-playing games lately, but it's part of the plan to get on it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, don't hold your breath. I've got traveling in the States right now, and there's going to be a bit more time before things are sorted.
Okay, but no more Kickstarter before you master something.
Yeah, no, I have to stop. I've been spending way too much money on it. What are you going to read next?
What am I going to read? It's always the issue. Because I keep mentioning stuff which I didn't finish. What am I going to read? I think I should finish Saga because I got the last two volumes of the comic book Saga on my bed table for a year now, and I don't know why I cannot manage to read them. So I think I'm going to do it before the recording of the next episode. I'm going to finish Saga.
Cool. Anything else? I think that's about it, right?
No. Now you got to say... thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
And in the meantime. And then I say, have good games.
Or should we do it again?
I think I'm going to keep it like this. It's perfect.
All right. Well, that's another episode wrapping up, the second episode of the second season of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. If you enjoyed it, how about sharing it with a friend? I mean, the ideal would be, as I said at the beginning of the podcast, for you to write a review. That makes a hell of a difference. And I will give you a shout out. I'll read it at the beginning of an episode of subsequent episode in an intro and that. Or if you enjoyed this, just also, you can send a link to the file to a friend of yours via email or post it to your friends on Facebook or whatever your favorite social network is. It could be whatever it is, like Twitter, anything, Reddit, you know. And otherwise, if you have feedback, questions, comments, always love to hear from you. You can contact me on Twitter or follow me on Twitter. My username is @HippoWill. That's HIPPOWILL. Or you can post a comment on the Ice Cream for Everyone page on Facebook. You can like the page on Facebook. Or you can send me an email at Willem, that's WILLEM, @icecreamforeveryone.net. Everything spelled out, icecreamforeveryone.net. And that's about it for now. So until next time, we're going to have a bunch of episodes coming up in the next few days. Yeah, that's about it. All right, have a great day or a great evening, great morning, whatever time it is for you. All right, bye.